Welcome one and all to episode 242. That's 242 of the Kaiju Podcast. I am your host, Chad O'Brien. Today we've only got one person with us. That's the guy over there introducing himself.
Jason Gibson. Hey guys. Wow, I've never done that before.
Yes, that's Jason Gibson. So he was a little shy. He's camera shy sometimes.
Good thing there's no cameras here.
As far as you know. As far as you know. But, right. Chris Charlton is not with us this week. So, just the two of us riffing and joshing and talking about secret spy cameras that are, everywhere, of course. They are in your microwaves, in your soda bottles.
Definitely not in your toilets. Don't go looking. Definitely not there.
Right. I'm trying to think. Like, there are at least three cameras pointed somewhat in my direction at this very moment.
I can see two.
My cellular phone device. Plus my laptop and my PlayStation VR camera. So, I am being constantly watched. The NSA is on my every move, I'm sure.
What's the Japanese NSA, Chad?
I don't know, because they're so secret that no one has ever heard of them before.
They're going to have one, right?
I would assume. The Emperor's Royal Guard. these are not questions that that I can answer. So
they're just called like the Iga and the Koga, right?
Yeah, sure. For those not in the know, those are two historically famous ninja clans. So right. Let's see. Here we go. The Public Security Intelligence Agency is the National Intelligence Agency of Japan. I guess that would be...
The PSA? The PSA?
The PSIA.
Oh, okay.
The PSIA.
The PSIA.
Right. Although I guess since that's intelligence, that would mean more like FBI or CIA. But, right. Anyway, that's all that came up on a quick Google search of Japanese NSA.
Okay.
Right. So, as you may guess, this episode does not feature a lot of news, because there's not much news. In fact, one of the most interesting articles, and I actually did find this quite interesting, there was a piece on Kotaku this week about Final Fantasy XIV players apparently involved in some kind of real estate dispute.
Like a real life real estate dispute?
No, in a virtual Final Fantasy XIV real estate dispute. Because apparently there aren't many homes available in that game, and you can apparently buy homes there. It costs not a lot. They were saying that two people in particular bought up like an entire neighborhood of 28 homes so that they could have some privacy.
And can you sell the homes? Are they speculators?
You can sell them. I'm sure, but apparently it cost something like, well, it costs like millions of in-game currency, but that turns out to be more like about $400. So, doesn't seem like it would take that much effort to buy your own house, but apparently there's just a shortage. Anyway, right, so there's not a whole bunch of news. Right,
yeah.
So, but there was one interesting thing that came out this week, and we are fresh on a hot take of this new
video game related media production.
That's right. In case you may not have heard, Netflix apparently has licensed out Konami's Castlevania series for an anime series, and it just came out, I believe it just came out today. It could have been yesterday, but I think it's today. Anyway, it's out now. It's great. I was initially surprised to find out that, despite being called, like, you know, a TV series, and this is season one being released, there are but four episodes.
I kind of feel like it's a TV series in the way that, like, the BBC Sherlock is a TV series, you know? There's, like, four episodes, but they're, like, a little long. Except these ones aren't really long. These are only, like, 25 minutes, right?
Yeah. That's true, yeah. Certain animes have had very short seasons before.
But those are more like OVAs, right? Not really full series.
Sure, but I mean, OVA and series, OVA standing for original video animation. OVA and series are kind of interchangeable, really, aren't they?
But the standard definition of an anime series is like a 12 episode, half hour, you know, show. You get 12 episodes per season. Usually you get two seasons and then it's done. Usually.
I would still contest that because, I was actually rewatching, Dragon Ball Z over the past few weeks.
Kai or Z?
Z, the original Z.
I would really prefer Kai because, man, it cuts us so much out of that filler. It's just it's too much, man.
Well, it's not like I'm focusing on it. It's background stuff, and Kai isn't on Netflix anyway. So
okay.
So Dragon Ball Z, and it has all 10 seasons of the original show, but some of those seasons are ridiculously short. I believe it's season 4 that's only like 10 episodes, but then it goes to season 5, which has like 40. They just tend to call it a season whenever, you know, they feel satisfied that a good chunk of episodes has described a certain situation. They're like, well, the storyline's covered. That's a season.
I suppose so. But nowadays, I think they would sort of wait until the manga has progressed far enough and then make a full story arc, and they plan out the 12 episode season, and then like they'll just stop making it, like they did with, say, for instance, Attack on Titan, right? I assume they're going to make more anime because it's a really popular manga, but like they had to wait for the manga to make enough story so that they could make more anime. Right?
Yeah, but we've also seen the exact opposite of that play out in things like Full Metal Alchemist.
Or which Bleach.
Which had, you know, completely different endings from the manga because... back on video games and Castlevania. So Castlevania has, like we said, four episodes, each about 25 minutes in length. And our hot take is, my hot take, I don't know about Jason's, is that it is fantastic.
Yes, it's quite good.
Yeah.
Quite good.
Exceptionally good. Like, in almost all possible factors that you could grade an anime on, like, animation itself is quite good. The voice acting is spectacular, featuring some performances by, people like, Richard Armitage, I forgot his name now, but he played Max Headroom. There's some really good voice acting going on, and the artistic direction is very well done. It does get exceptionally gruesome.
Yeah, they don't pull punches.
Right.
They do not do that.
And that makes me very, very happy. Because, as much as Castlevania, the video game series itself, doesn't tend to go into the M rating, except for, like, the last ones, the Lord of Shadow, or whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe any other one has ever gone to M. I could be wrong. But,
no, I mean, they've always been marketed towards, like, you know, the 13 to 14 year old crowd, so you can't really do that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if you ever think about what's going on in this world, then yeah, there's going to be some very ghastly, grisly stuff, and that that plays out in the anime in spectacular fashion. Yeah.
If you have kids, definitely never ever let them watch this.
Right.
Don't ever do that.
Age limit is 40 and above.
40 and above. That's 17-ish, I guess, would be fine.
Yep. Without going into any kind of real spoiler territory, we will say that one thing you should be aware of when starting the quote-unquote series is that season one really acts more as a jumping off point.
It's a prologue, really, more than anything else.
Yeah, it's you're not going to see a gigantic major storyline because, they just don't put it in those first four episodes. But it is good. It's fun as well. There's actually some good, like, comedic stuff. Jason, having only watched, like, the first episode, you might not have seen too much of that, but...
No, there wasn't a whole lot of funny things in that first episode.
Yeah.
Definitely not very funny.
No. You didn't laugh when, like, the skeleton was burning? No.
No, when the woman got burned at the stake, no, I did not laugh at that.
No.
I guess the very, very last thing to happen in the first episode was kind of funny.
Yeah.
A little?
Something about a goat and, blood and straw.
I was talking about, like, literally the last thing. Guy's like, shit.
Yes.
That was kind of funny.
It's a really good start, and the series has been renewed for a second season.
As it should.
As it should, yes. And so we will be looking forward to that. And there's obviously no idea when that's going to come out. Hopefully we won't have to wait, like, longer than a year.
Hopefully not that long. I'm kind of hoping maybe around New Year's would be nice.
Would be nice, but I don't know. They're doubling the order count.
Yeah.
For the next season. So we will get eight episodes instead of four. Good stuff. And it led me to think, like, what, of course, you know, what other video game series do you think would make for a successful anime adaptation?
Now, well, I tell you what didn't make for a successful anime adaptation was Final Fantasy. Did you see that thing? That monstrosity?
Are you talking about the movie?
No, it was the anime series. I think it was called Final Fantasy Unlimited or something.
Oh, I heard that. About it. I never
watched it. Yeah, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. That did not translate well. But what would you like to see, Chad?
Oh, I could think of all kinds of things I want to see. But the hard part is thinking about what would serve better as an animated show over you know, live action. So for example, we have the Witcher series is coming, and that's going to be live action. Although that's slightly different from what we're talking about, because obviously this is I'm talking about series that are based on video games, and while the Witcher series is widely more well known because of the video game series around the world.
It's originally a book, right?
Right. It's originally, well, a series of books. And like the in Poland where the author comes from, like he's like a national celebrity, and
he's basically like the George R. R. Martin of Poland, right?
Yep, yeah. And the Netflix series is going to adhere more towards his original interpretation. Apparently, there have been interviews with him about like the direction the games have gone, and he hasn't really liked it that much.
Well, it seems better for a TV series to follow a novel than a video game anyways, right?
But yeah, so like I said, some things will fit more with live action. For example, if we were ever going to see a Fallout series, that would be better in live action, I think.
Oh yeah.
Certain things could definitely make good anime. The Legend of Zelda already had an anime at one point, but it sucked. So
are you talking about that, what was that? It was the, was it Panavision? No, what was it called? The CD, Zelda CD, that game.
The CDI games.
The CDI games, right? Yeah. It was kind of the same thing, right?
Kind of. But those are terrible. So
I know, it was terrible, that's what I'm saying. It was really bad.
Yeah. We could do that with a more modern studio. I think it would work out better. Other things I'd like to see, sticking with kind of the fantasy genre, although slightly less ghastly, you could go with Dragon Age. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you're going to go Dragon Age, you could even go Mass Effect, too. It's kind of similar, right?
Certainly, yeah. You could do both of those. Now that they've pretty much canceled Andromeda, why not just send a team over there to, like, keep the interest alive or something? Mm. I don't know. Mm. Another one is Metroid. Sticking with space. Like, Mass Effect, go to Metroid.
How would you do Samus, right? Because she's, like, the silent protagonist, isn't she? Like, how would you make a TV series with a silent protagonist?
She talks in Other M.
most people don't really like that game.
I mean, you know, like, if you think about the world, she's going to have to talk. And if you were ever going to make Legend of Zelda, like, Link would have to talk. He couldn't just go, yeah!
Talked in the CDI games.
Right, yeah. So, of course, these characters are going to have to talk. The Super Mario Brothers cartoon had Mario and Luigi talking.
Super Mario Super Show.
That's right. Sonic obviously had him talking.
I used to watch that show all the time when I was in grade school.
Yep, they ate chili dogs. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, I would actually like to see, and it's already kind of been done, but like a Mega Man X anime. Because I know X4 actually had cutscenes in it that were all completely anime done. But just like the backstory, or I think the X series, with, like, you know, the origins of Mega Man X and Zero as Dr. Light and Dr. Wily, and then, like, hundreds of years in the future. There's a rich storyline to dig into there. And plus, it really lends itself well to the episodic, you know, thing of anime with robot bosses that you're going to fight. Mm-hmm. I think that would actually just, like, the structure of the game lends itself well to an anime.
Certainly. And just speaking of structure and bosses and things like that, I think Dark Souls would actually make a fantastic anime.
Have to be pretty dark, though. Pretty dark.
Netflix has shown they can do that.
They have.
Now there, you would also have to have a speaking protagonist.
It's true.
Although, I mean, to be fair, again, in his games, he actually does talk. Like, people react to his silence as if he said something.
Just throw Tom Hardy in there, you know?
There you go, yeah. Right. And then you can save money on localization as well. So
yeah.
He can just roar, 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 roar. That's Japanese, and roar, 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 roar. That's Russian. Roar, 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 roar. That's English. Yeah. So, I think there's actually a pretty good well of stuff out there. Now, I mean, there are certainly games that have fantastic stories, which you might think would be good for an anime, but at the same time, like, kind of why I would never want a Metal Gear Solid movie is because Metal Gear Solid already is its own movie.
Basically is. And, it's just a bunch of cutscenes, right?
And for the same reason, yeah. I wouldn't really care for it to become an anime because it is an anime, like gigantic robots fighting each other, and or little dudes fighting giant robots, or all combinations of dudes and robots.
If you want to watch the Metal Gear anime, you can go online to YouTube, and people have made supercuts of just all the cutscenes from Metal Gear just stuck together. You don't even have to play the game. You can just sit there and watch like an 11-hour YouTube movie of all the Metal Gear cutscenes.
We could go back to some shows that were actually pretty good. Mortal Kombat actually had a kind of halfway decent cartoon a while ago, but it was super geared towards kids. So,
the very first movie was not terrible.
I mean, I'm not talking about the movies. I'm talking about the actual cartoons.
So. Fair enough. Okay.
The first movie was not terrible. The second one was unjustifiable, but,
yes.
Right.
And we've already talked about this, some months ago, but Assassin's Fist, the Street Fighter anime, or not anime, sorry, that was live action series. Mm-hmm. Still, Assassin's Fist was really quite good.
Mm-hmm. Is that the YouTube one?
I don't know if it was YouTube. It may be. It was kind of low budget, but it was really, really well done. And it was only about like 3 or 4 episodes, I think, or was it a short film? I can't remember.
I cannot recall the name of it at all, but there was actually a YouTube Mortal Kombat series live action, but it was
it may have been. I don't remember the production company for Assassin's Fist, but it was really good.
So I think there's actually quite a lot of good stuff out there. Hopefully Netflix sees a lot of success with Castlevania. Now this isn't they haven't announced any further video game kind of anime projects, things like that just yet, but Netflix actually is jumping into more anime, which is actually kind of nice to see. They had The Seven Deadly Sins as well. That's it's a Japanese manga, but Netflix commissioned like the actual anime adaptation. So, nice to see them branching out. They're killing it with movies and TV, and it's just nice to see them.
What was that one recently? Blame?
Blame. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was Netflix original or if they just
Build it that way. I didn't really look into it, but the way it came up on my Netflix queue seemed like it was kind of an original, but I could be wrong.
I could be wrong too. Yeah, I don't know. I've heard good things about that as well. I need to watch it. it's on my queue, but I keep getting distracted by the latest and greatest hits from, like, Dragon Ball Z. That's right.
Dragon Ball. Okay. Dude. Just watch Super, man.
Well, actually, I had no idea until, like, last week that Super is actually a new series. I thought Super was the Western name for Kai.
No, they just call it Kai, I think, in America. Mm-hmm. It's just Dragon Ball Kai. But yeah, no, Super is brand new. Yep. It ignores the fact that GT ever happened. Mm-hmm. Like, it just continues on from Z.
Oh, okay.
Which is great, because, like, GT had almost no affiliation with Toriyama whatsoever. Mm. So when he came back to do Super, they're just like, well, we'll just cut that out of canon and just continue on from Z.
Well, I know that I've never watched GT, but I know a lot of people did not like the things they did in it, but at the same time, I watched Dragon Ball Z. I watched the Boo saga for the first time. And there's a segment in there where Goku and Vegeta fuse together and then become a piece of candy and fight the ultimate evil in the universe. So, so Toriyama is not the end all be all.
Is not infallible.
That's right. Ultimate evil getting beat up by a piece of candy. It was hilarious, but at the same time, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, later Boo sort of becomes a good guy, kind
yes,
of.
Yes. Okay. Well, unfortunately, like I said, there's not much news, so that's gonna wrap up our discussion for this week. But don't go away, because we do have video games to talk about, because we have been playing them video games.
That's true, we have.
And I think this is the first time in a long while that you actually taught me out. I've only been playing one game this week.
Yeah, I have two.
And it's actually kind of a short one. But I'll let you go first. You can pick.
Okay. I'll let you pick. I played a golf game or a narrative game. Which one would you like to hear about?
Genre wise, I would much rather hear about the narrative game, but I am actually very interested in hearing how Sony's like really big push to mobile is going. So I want to hear about Mina no Golf.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk about Mina no Golfu, which is everybody's golf, or known in the West as Hot Shots Golf.
Not anymore.
It was, which is how I was introduced to the series back on PlayStation 2. Mm-hmm. I played Hot Shots Golf 2 was my first one, and it was awesome. I loved that game. I think I played Hot Shots Golf 3. So when this popped up on the Japanese App Store, which I believe it's Japan only currently. I don't know if it's coming out in the West or not. But when it popped up in the Japanese App Store, I thought, hey, I'm reserving that. And it sent me a notification a couple days ago. So I downloaded it and I tried it. And it's Hot Shots Golf. I would actually kind of classify it as Candy Crush Hot Shots Golf Saga. Because they have mobilized the hell out of this game. I mean, the basic gameplay is the Hot Shots Golf that you know. You know, you have an avatar, which it's kind of unfortunate. Like in the old Hot Shots Golf games, they had the pre-made avatars and they were all like crazy kooky characters and they'd have different, you know, personalities. This one is just like, it's a Mii, basically. You make a little Nintendo Mii, or well, it's not a Nintendo Mii because it's Sony, but you make a little personal avatar and that's you. And you don't get like the crazy kooky people that I really liked that. But anyways, so you get your avatar and in the game, you know, you can set your spin on the ball, you pull back, you do the shots, you take into account the wind. It's pretty much just like any Hot Shots Golf game you've played. They just had to rejigger the controls a little bit for the touch screen.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's the outside of the gameplay that's really, really, really mobilized. So you can get like new clothes for your avatar, but you have to like earn money to buy them, and they're kind of a gacha system. So like, you can get like one roll of the dice for new clothes for like 3,000 in-game coins, or you can do like a roll of the dice, like 10 for like a small discount or something. And when you get so like a random piece of clothing, like you get a new hat or you get some shoes or you get a bracelet, something like that.
Mm. But it's all just cosmetic, doesn't do anything for your golf game or whatever.
So far, yes. But in the screen where you go to equip the new stuff, it does have a list of your stats. So I kind of think that maybe like if you progress far enough or at some point in the future, you can get things that will affect your stats. Maybe. Mm-hmm. The things I have right now don't. The way you actually increase your stats is every time you beat a hole, you get golf balls. You get like a power ball or like a spin ball or a backspin ball or an impact ball. And then you go to the training screen and you have like a grid of like little holes that you can put balls into to increase your stats. And I think you start off with something like 15 empty holes in your grid, and every time you level up your character, you get another like empty hole in your grid, so you can level up your stat. But you have to have the correct ball to level up the stat that you want. So every time you beat a hole, you get more experience points, you get another level, you get another hole to put another ball into. But if you don't have the right ball, like say you want to hit the ball farther, you want to put a power ball in there. If you don't have a ball, power ball, then you can't level up that stat. You have to continue playing holes until you get the ball that you want. And each ball that you put into your stat only levels it by 1 point. Everything, I think your base minimum stats is like 100. And then the maximum, I don't know what it is. It's got to be like 500 or 600, like because the meter they have on there has enough space for about that much improvement. So you're putting balls of 1 point in there to increase a stat that has like a 500% improvement ability. Ah. It's a pretty grindy thing they've
put. You're gonna be putting lots of balls in holes.
Yeah, you are. And they put the like star achievement system from lots of mobile games into each hole. So like say for instance you play a hole, there are 3 achievement stars you can get. Like, you know, hit a birdie, you get 1 star for doing that. Get a certain number of points, you get 1 star for doing that. Use backspin on a shot and you get stars for doing that. So if you get all 3 stars, then you sort of unlock special holes later on that you can play against like boss matches or special things and stuff like that. But you can't play the next hole until you beat the previous hole. So that's why I sort of likened it to the whole Candy Crush thing, where it's just like a straight progression from hole to hole.
Are those goals like randomized or are they just like set for that specific goal?
They're set for each level. But once you clear a course, like the first course is Japan. So once you clear Japan on beginner, then you can either go to the next course, which I forget where it is, or you can go back and do Japan on like amateur level, which has like harder tees and the versus modes are harder. So it's sort of similar to the old Hot Shots Golf too. It's if you know Hot Shots Golf, that's what it is. The only thing that I do have a bit of a gripe about it is not the original Hot Shots Golf development team. They changed the development team entirely for it. I don't remember what developer they went with, but it is not the original Hot Shots Golf developer, and it kind of shows because while the gameplay is the same, the sort of flair that Hot Shots Golf or Mino no Golfo used to have that I sort of referenced earlier is just not there. It sort of seems kind of soulless, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen with most free-to-play games.
Yeah, if you like Hot Shots Golf, which I do, the gameplay is there. It's the golf is actually kind of pretty good, but like the aesthetics and the fun factor are just sort of lacking compared to the previous installments of Hot Shots. So, yeah.
How about multiplayer?
I haven't actually tried that yet. I've only put like an hour or two into it because I've been playing my other game a lot more because it's honestly just way better. But I think it's more like a ranking type mode. I don't think it's like a head-to-head type thing. But I could be wrong. So it's
like asynchronous?
Yeah. But the thing is like because it's in Japanese and my spoken Japanese is passable, my written Japanese is pretty terrible. So like I can navigate through the menus and stuff, but I don't necessarily understand everything that it's trying to tell me. So I could be completely wrong about that.
All right. Well, sorry to hear about the soulless nature, but
gameplay's good.
Yeah. So maybe we'll hear back once we've tried some more multiplayer and figured out whether it's asynchronous or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we'll move on to game I've been playing. Speaking of games, that was the best segue, right? I have been
one
playing
of, one of
one of. Thank you. Hole in one of. right. So I've been playing the Sexy Brutale.
We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yes, we did talk about it last week, and we also said there were like no games coming out this week, so I made good on my promise, and I picked that up. So Sexy Brutale actually came out in April, I don't mind talking about it now. It is a fantastic little game by Tequila Works, who are kind of more known for the kerfluffle with their other game, their other big game, Rhyme. They also made Deadlight, but I don't think a lot of people talk about that anymore. But anyway, right. So, honestly, if there wasn't a splash screen when you start up the game saying that this was Tequila Works, I would never have been able to tell you, because it features a dramatically different artistic style. Everything has this kind of boxy, not super boxy, but angular kind of style, and it's very colorful, very bright, very vibrant. It's very nice, and the game itself plays from a kind of isometric cutaway style where you you see one room at a time, and it kind of looks like a diorama. So the walls are cut away, the walls facing the camera are cut away, that kind of thing. So, you play as, the priest, Lafcadio Boone, who has been, invited to a kind of yearly gathering of, this mansion owner's, closest friends, and, it turns out that, there's murder afoot.
Oh, yay.
But, the interesting thing is that this game plays out not like a detective novel or anything like that, because you see the murders, or you can see them, you don't have to see them, but, you can see the murders actually playing out, and, you can, instead of finding out who done it, you try to find out how to make it not happen. So it's kind of like anti-Hitman. Especially because, like, in the game Hitman, you know, you're trying to find out all of these creative ways to kill somebody, and there's a kind of non-interventional policy that you have to engage in with all of the when you're trying to save these people. You can't engage them at all. You can't touch the person who's going to kill them. You can't touch the person who's going to get killed, anything like that, because there's some kind of weird, like, I don't know, spiritual manifestation thing where you're not actually supposed to be there. But you are. You can go around, but if you ever are in the same room with another person, they all wear a mask, and the mask will start to chase you. Not the person themselves, but the mask kind of has its own little, mind, I guess. So, the mask will start to chase you, and it will drain your life, and, that's obviously not good, so you don't want to be in the same room. And when you are, like, time stops. So, another very interesting thing about this game is that it's all real time, and it plays out over the course of a single day. And it also has a, it's kind of like Groundhog Day, because you can reset the day. You have a little magical stopwatch, and when you press it, bloop, 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 you go right back to noon when the day starts.
So something like Majora's Mask type
stuff? Kind of like that. Except, you know, you have 12 hours instead of, 72. But, right. Also, you won't be saving the world. You'll be saving, like, one person at a time. Because, so you find out all of these murders, but, like, you only have time to save one person. And when you save that person, hooray! And that person will suddenly, like, take off their mask. Like, they'll be like, ah, I feel like a burden's been lifted off my shoulder. I'll just take off my mask now. And then you get that mask, and it gives you, like, special powers. So, like, one mask gives you perfect hearing, so you can listen when the staff are like pressing codes on security doors, and find out what the code is, things like that.
Oh, so like solving particular murders will give you the tools to solve future murders.
Right. And it's not like an open world kind of thing. It's all linear. You solve this crime, then this crime, then this crime. And you go about like that. So it is very gated. One thing that was incredibly frustrating is that you have free reign to the mansion, except for, you don't, because there are lots of doors that have like, invisible specters or just like a special force that keeps you out. So it gets especially frustrating in later, sections when you realize you have to go pretty much all across the mansion because you can't go through the one door that is just like, it leads right where you want to go. Although I will say, like earlier I was talking about, you don't want to be in the same room with another person, but actually the masks that chase you when that happens are actually kind of slow and they don't drain your life super fast. So it's very possible to just like run through a room while somebody's in it and just like get into another door, if you know where you're going. And one of the interesting things that comes up is like you can open up your map and, in Majora's Mask, you had like a diary that told you what people are doing at certain times and certain days. But in this game, you have like a physical like representation on the map. You can see the person's icons and what they're doing throughout the day.
Oh, so it's like that map from Harry Potter.
That's right. Yeah, kind of. So you can scroll forward and you're like, okay, this person's going to be here then. And like that becomes important, when you need certain items because, there was a very specific item I needed to complete a puzzle, and I was like, okay, I know this guy collects this item here, and then puts it in a dumbwaiter, and the dumbwaiter will go down here, so I'll wait until 2 o'clock, and then I'll go over there. Time-wise, like, the day goes by pretty quickly, so you do have to do some repetition sometimes, especially if you can't figure out how to solve a murder or, you know, prevent a murder. Like I said, the day goes by pretty quickly, so you don't have to do too much. I've been taking my time with the game because I really love the artistic style and I love like, I love the interactions. The characters are brilliant. The design for some of the murders are amazing, and I just like watching them play out, as grotesque as that may seem.
You just let them get murdered, even though you're supposed to stop it.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I'm not gonna say a single thing about any of them because they are all like these intricate little plays in a way, and that kind of serves the diorama look of everything. It just feels like you are watching a play being carried out. It's a very, very interesting game. I'm gonna just throw out some nitpicks here, but, I don't know about the PC experience, but, on PS4, there are a lot of, spots where, I try to go through a door and sometimes like the button doesn't register or like my character will kind of just bounce off it for a little bit before finally going through. And it's not that big a deal, but it does cost some time. Sometimes there's very slow loading of a room because each room is loaded as you go into it. Sometimes you'll be staring at the room you were in, but like, you can hear yourself moving around in the new room. I don't think there's much replayability here because there's really only there absolutely is only one way to solve, or prevent each murder. There are some other things. There are some secret rooms you can find, some, collectibles you can pick up. Which will reveal like more of the story and the history of the manor, which is another fantastic thing, but you have to read that all in menus, which it's kind of a downer, but it's an indie studio, so...
You like Dark Souls, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're used to reading your lore.
Sure, sure. But I don't know. The one thing I would say is I would have loved like a voiced cast with it. As it is, everything is presented in text. But again, it's an indie developer, so,
Well, yeah, and even voice cast, man, that can be good or that can be bad.
That is true. There is one fantastic section where you have to, save a singer and, you watch her perform and she sings like her full song while she's doing it. The soundtrack is also really good. And as you continue playing the game, it kind of evolves. So nice stuff. Ooh. Sexy Brutal. Sounds good. Yeah.
Sounds good. The other game that I played this week was called, Rakuen, which is Japanese for paradise. This is basically a one-woman game from Laura Shigehara. She is the composer for Plants vs. Zombies and also To the Moon. Did you play To the Moon?
I've never heard of it. So.
It's an indie PC game. It's kind of like a 2D journey type game.
Mm-hmm.
Where like you go through it and you do stuff, but it's more about the visual experience than trying to beat enemies and stuff. and that's sort of like what Rakuen is. It's an RPG maker game because I mean she's a composer and she's had like experience with development, but she's not a developer. She's a composer. So she made this game, I think basically by herself. I think she had some help with the art and things like that, art design. But most of it, the rest of it was hers. It's sort of like if you had a JRPG, but without battles entirely. So it's entirely story.
Okay.
There's no fighting. But the control is what you expect from like a Super Nintendo era JRPG.
Does it still have like encounters?
No.
Okay. Thinking like Undertale where you could technically go through without fighting. But yeah, okay.
Nope. Nothing. There are no encounters whatsoever.
Okay.
I mean, there are ways that you can die. Like say, for instance, there are parts where you go underwater. If you stay underwater too long, you will drown. And you'll die. Or there are evil spirits that you encounter. If you touch them, you will die. But there are no actual encounters. You never leave like the O of the map, the overworld screen that you're on.
Hmm.
So you play the game as an unnamed boy and his mother. You start the game in a hospital, and you don't really know why you're there. And you go through the game and you sort of like discover little bits and pieces about the hospital and about why you're there, but it's all kind of mysterious and you don't really know what's going on. And so you're walking around the hospital and you meet other people, the other people in the hospital that are like the doctors or the patients or things like that. And you sort of gather that you're in Japan, maybe, because the developer I mentioned, Laura Sugihara, she's half Japanese, half American, and looking her up, a little bit of her history, she grew up in both places, so she has a background in both, so she actually knows about how to be an American and how to be Japanese and the cultural implications of being both. So like you sort of like kind of gather like you're in Japan, but the people in the hospital are varied. There's a guy named Kisaburo, which is Japanese name, and there's also a guy named Tony. So it's very multicultural place. And the other interesting thing is that when you're walking around, once you get past the little introduction phase, your mom is also always with you. So there's you, the unnamed boy, and then your mother, just whose name is Mother. She never gets a name. She's Mother. So you walk around and she's always just behind you. And at any time, you can just talk to your mom and be like, hey, mom, what's going on? And she'll give you like some little motherly advice or like, can you give me a hint, mom? I think you should do this. So it turns out like when you first start the game, like you're in the hospital for some unknown sickness that is chronic, and your mom's going to come visit you, but you have this book that your mom always reads to you, and it's been stolen or missing. There's a thief in the hospital. And so you go around and you solve some mysteries and crimes, and you find the book, and you bring it back, and then your mom shows up and she tells you about the book, and it apparently it's been in your family a long time. And then she tells you that it's actually like a magic book, and there's a legend that if you have the right key for the book, that you can go into the world that the book describes, which is Morizora's forest. And Morizora is like this forest god that will give you one wish if you do like a trial, a task for him. So like your mom tells you that basically, you know, it's a legend, but you know, who knows, maybe it's real. And then she gives you the key for the book. And then you see like this strange door appear in the back, and your mom's like, hey, that's cool, we should go in the door. So then you go in through the door and you transport to the legendary Morizora's forest, and you can meet all like the like animals and magical creatures in there. It's really kind of unclear whether this is actually like a real like RPG, like you're going to a magical land, or whether it's sort of like a little kid in his imagination. Mm-hmm. Like you don't really know which one it is. And I really like that about it, because like all the creatures you meet in the forest are analogs of all the people that are in the hospital. So like the guy I mentioned before, Tony, he's like this super grumpy old guy. And in the forest, he's like this old bear, and you can go solve the bear's problem and it'll help the real guy in the real world. Like it'll sort of like solve his problem. Okay. So that's kind of like what you're trying to do. You want to get a wish from Morizora because I don't remember. Like, I think you just kind of want to wish to be better, or you just want to wish not to be sick anymore. But you go to meet Morizora and he's asleep, and the guardians of Morizora say like, well, you know, you need to wake him up, and to wake him up, you have to make everybody happy. So you have to fix everybody's problems. So you go around fixing people's problems, but you have to go back and forth between the real hospital that you're in and the Wonderland forest where you meet Morizora to sort of like navigate around the world and to solve the problems. And I think the real reason that I really love this game, like, it's the subject matter that it tackles. You know, the graphics are straight out of a Super Nintendo.
Well, it's RPG Maker, so.
Yeah, it's RPG Maker. Apart from, like, there are, like, some I wouldn't really call them cutscenes, but, like, conversation scenes, mm-hmm. where they have, like, some anime-style portraits of the people you're talking to. But, like, the subject matter that it tackles are things like, the loss of a loved one to dementia, or the loss of a child, or what was the other one? I've only solved three people's problems so far, but like, it's really like emotional. The sort of things that you do, it's like things that real people would really have real problems with, and it doesn't really shy away from it. Like, the way that it approaches it is very video gamey, in that like I would not feel wrong letting my children play this game once they're maybe a couple years older, because my son's like 6 now. Like maybe around 10, I might let him play this game, because he wouldn't necessarily understand all the deep meanings and implications of it because it's presented in sort of a childish manner. Sure. But as an adult, I can really, really appreciate like what's going on in this game and sort of the subtlety and just tenderness that they bring to these really, really human problems that happen in everybody's life, and the way that you can interact with the people that are experiencing them and sort of kind of help them through it is really, really good. And I really, really like it. And I think I'm pretty sure it's only on PC right now, but if it ever comes to PS4, I'd really recommend you pick it up, because it's just really, really, it's a beautiful story.
And regarding like playing with the kids, like that, there aren't too many games that are not focused on either competition or, if you're playing single player, then just strife and conflict. So it's always nice to see that there are other games, that offer more peaceful kind of outlooks and outcomes.
Yeah.
That will do it for our games this week. But we're not finished yet. because we are here for round two of our ESRB quiz.
Bring it on!
Now, because Chris isn't here, I decided to pick a game that I'm pretty sure, like, 95% sure you played, but that Chris probably did not. First, just a little bit about this game. All I'll tell you is the year it came out. It was 2012 video game.
Okay. 2012. That was the year after the disaster. Okay. All right.
Okay. So for those who don't know, the ESRB quiz is where I looked up titles on the ESRB website because they do have very detailed information about why they gave certain games the rating that they did. Now, this applies more for bigger budget titles. Indie games don't usually have a lot of details on this. But, yeah. And I break down the information into a couple of tiers. We go from 1 to 4, 1 being the most general. So it will be pretty hard to guess all the way up to part 4, or hint 4, which is pretty much blatantly obvious. Let's get started. Question 1, or
okay.
Hint 1. Hint
1. Okay.
Yes. The game depicts some female characters in revealing outfits and includes some sexual suggestive dialogue, e.g., "Hey, sweetheart, you want to play with me? You're a lot cuter than my regular." The words, let's just say, I have no problem with these words, but, you know, "fuck, shit, and asshole" can be heard in the game.
2012. When you said like females and suggestive clothing, I was going to go straight Duke Nukem, but that was not 2012. And we already covered the fact that GTA was not released in 2012 last week. I'm going to need a second hit.
All right, hit number 2. Certain weapons result in dismembered limbs. And attacks are accompanied by exaggerated blood spatter effects. Some environments depict mutilated corpses on the ground or hanging from the ceiling. During one interactive sequence, blank, this is edited, blank brands a restrained man's cheek with a hot iron.
This wasn't No More Heroes, was it?
It was not No More Heroes. Double negative there, but it was More Heroes.
More Heroes. There was no Silent Hill release that year. Nope, it's not there.
Okay. Our fact checker, that is me, is also telling us that No More Heroes came out in 2008, a full 4 years before
this. What game. About 2? No More Heroes 2.
Oh, our fact checker is sleeping right now. You can't check that out.
Okay.
So, the third hint. As players help blank exact revenge on those who betrayed blank, that could be him or her, they can use pistols, crossbows, swords, and grenades to kill human enemies in ranged and melee-style combat. Violence is sometimes accompanied by slow motion effects and gurgling sounds from blank's victims.
Is this The Witcher?
It is not The Witcher.
Slow motion effect. Oh, Shadow of Mordor?
This is not The Shadow of Mordor.
Shit. Pistols and crossbows?
That's right. Swords? Yep. This is a game that I think you enjoyed. You are welcome to ask questions as well, as long as it's obviously not obvious.
That's against the spirit of the game, man. I gotta do it just from the hints you give me.
something to be said for having some back and forth between. But.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Okay. Well, is this set on Earth or is it a fantasy planet?
I'll answer some limited things on that, but it is Earth.
It is Earth. Okay.
Maybe like an It is an alternative Earth.
An alternative Earth. God, I'm drawing a blank, man. I got nothing.
Sure thing.
You got to give me the final hint.
The final hint, which will give it all away. This is an action game in which players assume the role of Blank, a royal bodyguard who has been framed for treason.
Oh, God. How can I not? Oh, damn it. It's Dishonored.
It is Dishonored. Dishonored. Right, so Dishonored, done by Arkane Studios, published by Bethesda, released in 2012. Received an M rating from the ESRB for all of the above said hints.
I don't remember the branding iron scene. When was that?
There was like a room where it was in the archives, I believe, or you were pretty deep in like the enemy's like headquarters, and you had to lure a guy into like the interrogation chamber.
And then you branded him.
Yeah, because they usually brand the other people. So
right, yeah, okay, yeah. That was how you eliminated him, like non-lethally.
Yeah,
was branding him. Yeah, yep. Okay, I got you. Yeah, okay, I remember that now.
Yep. Right. So there you have it. We are 1-1, one win and one loss.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yep. Well, thank you for that. We will continue with that next week. But for everyone who stuck around, thank you for listening. And that has been episode 242. For other video game news and reviews and videos and all that stuff, you can head on over to our website at kaijupop.com. We're also on social media. You can find us on youtube.com/kaijupop or twitter.com/kaijupop. Just in case you're thinking about new games that might be coming out next week, well, I've got some games, not a lot. We are still in kind of a summer slump, right now. But coming up, we have, what's this called? Derelict Fleet for PC and PS4. Fans of Final Fantasy XII, the Zodiac Age, the HD remake,
is that on PC?
It's only listed here for PS4.
I really want that. I really want that.
Did the original ever come out to PC?
I think so, but it was really late. Lately they've been putting Final Fantasies on PC, but it's like 2 years after release.
Okay. Wikipedia just says PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 4, so. Right. So, Energy Balance for PlayStation Vita. And that's it on that list, but I do have another list, just a moment here. The rest of these are only for PlayStation stuff, so The Bellows for PlayStation VR. Don't really know what it is, because it just shows a big old black background with The Bellows written on it, and it says, plunge yourself into a world of nightmares and fear, which...
It's a nightmare blacksmith.
That's right. Black the Fall, which is a side-scrolling, kind of Limbo-esque platform adventure game. D.D. Tower Rush, which sounds like a Tower Rush game. Derelict Fleet is a fast-paced space combat game where you are in derelict ships, I guess. Echoes of the Fae... The Fox's Trail.
Sounds great.
Is a visual novel slash adventure game. Next we have one thing I have been looking forward to is Fantastic Contraption, which is a PlayStation VR game where basically, like, you have to create all kinds of weird machines out of weird parts. So it's, just have fun in VR kind of game. Frisky Business.
Is it like Frisky Dingo?
It kind of, no. You are Mr. Falco Frisk, private detective of Frisk Investigative Solutions. Develop your relationships with your team as you take on your very first case. And I'm seeing a lot of busty women in the image. So, right. Hunting Simulator for PS4. I wasn't aware anyone but, like, Cabela's made these, but there you go. Iron Crypticle for PS4, which, seems like, an action game, maybe tower defense. Leap of Fate for PS4, it's a cyberpunk roguelite.
I played that, it's awful.
Okay.
It's bad.
Minecraft Story Mode Season 2, Episode 1 is released, that's the, Telltale series. MotoGP 17 for PS4, Mr. Pumpkin Adventure for Vita, which is a logic and puzzle solving game. Mr. Shifty for PS4, this is already out on Switch. It's a kind of, Hotline Miami-esque game, top-down action where...
Yeah, I really, really, really wanted to try that. I just haven't tried time yet. Looks really good.
Next, Serial Cleaner, which, you play as a cleaner for the mob. Transport Giant for PS4, which is weird because the cover definitely looks like a tycoon game and it says on the image, Transport Giant, be a transport tycoon. So I'm not sure if that's the same company, but just by putting tycoon on the box, I'm gonna assume that they are, because, otherwise, I don't know. Legal teams might come after you for that. Anyway. Yeah. Warlocks vs. Shadows, 2D action RPG brawler, and last, but, I don't know, maybe least, looking at this image, is Yamayama.
Yamayama,
PS4. Play as one of the armless rejects in the Yamayama Arena of Joy. Your goal is to impress the flat god faces of the underverse by fat suiting your opponents into oblivion. And that's gonna do it. But so again, you can reach us on all those websites I mentioned earlier. If you want to talk to us personally, I am on Twitter at Kyoshi Banzai.
I am at Gibsaurus.
And that is going to do it for episode 242 of the Kaiju Podcast. Thanks for staying with us and listening and liking and subscribing and doing all that. And we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
See ya.